Hello and welcome to Black Gold, a five-part series that digs deep through the 3CR archive to present Black Gold. My name's Kerry Lee Harding and I'm the producer of the series. Each episode was created right here in the studios of 3CR Community Radio on Wurundjeri land in Fitzroy, Melbourne, together with assistant producer Corey Green. Throughout the Black Gold series, we'll take you from the 1970s through to the present day, with a look at how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander broadcasters at 3CR covered some incredible community events and significant political struggles. We'll attend a land rights meeting in 1978, celebrate the life of broadcaster Lisa Belair, and hear about the success of the campaign to save Northland Secondary College. We'll also reflect back on the anti-bicentenary actions in 1988 and get up to date with the ongoing struggle for sovereignty and treaty. Just a warning to all our listeners, you will hear voices of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have passed. Now, episode one of the Black Gold series, Land Rights Struggles, with presenters Robbie Thorpe and Viv Malo.
The first people of this land continue to fight for land rights in occupied Australia on land that was never ceded.
The struggle for recognition of sovereignty and for genocide to end and treaty to be made as per instructions remains the same today as it did then.
In this program, we will take you inside Aboriginal Land Rights Meeting, held in Melbourne in 1978.
You'll hear voices of people who have since passed and of people still active in Aboriginal affairs and struggle today.
Including Jack Davis, Margaret Briggs, Marsha Langton, Mark Noble and Joyce Hall.
Listen to these voices from the past talk about issues that are very real to us still here and now. In the late 70s, Malcolm Fraser was Prime Minister of the Liberal Party Australia. Black Power movement was in full swing in Melbourne. People-powered self-determination and community control was at its peak.
Melbourne, Victoria, was seen as a beacon for others to come and get both black and white support, express what was happening here and elsewhere.
This is both a rare and valuable recording captured long before the digital age of social media and emails, when information sharing was much more difficult.
Sit back and listen to these voices, captured for us to learn, compare, remember and understand as we examine our history of resistance and how we relate this to today.
Welcome you here tonight in Victoria, even though we don't recognise the state of Victoria, we recognise it as Aboriginal land. What's happening in Queensland and Western Australia has happened right throughout Australia since 1788. One of our first speakers tonight is Mr. Jack Davis, Western Australia Political Action Group editor, also of Identity magazine, will give you some insight into what's happening in that particular state, and would ask for your complete silence and listen to the true facts and not getting it out of white pages of a book with black printing in it. Thank you. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I came up here with the full intentions of being full of words and intentions of talking about the administrative tactics which happened, which you probably heard all heard on the news this evening regarding what has happened at Arakoon and possibly Mornington. But I, like my fellow speakers here, have been proclaiming these issues since early yesterday on the wider news media, and we had very high hopes of seeing a federal government takeover in the northern parts of Queensland at least. But this, of those of you who have seen the news tonight, you know, has failed by a compromise from the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs with the Premier of Queensland, Mr. Bjelke-Petersen. I don't live in Queensland, I have more learned friends behind me who come from Queensland and know the Queensland situation and will be able to explain that better than what I can. But I can say that we had hoped that federal intervention in Queensland, if it had been successful, those same tactics would have been applied in Western Australia and we would have been much better off for that have happening. But now, as I said, a lot of my good intentions have been lost, or have been subdued, I should say, because we, myself and my friends, now have to think up new tactics in the light of what has happened today in Queensland between the federal government and the Queensland Premier. The situation in West Australia, I've lived there all my life, is very bad as far as Aborigines are concerned, and it's particularly bad where Aborigines have Aboriginal land and mining is taking place and is likely to be taking place in the very near future. Sir Charles Court is a twin brother to Mr. Vajoki Peterson. They think alike, they act alike, and they all have those so-called, what they call, Christian principles of keeping Aborigines as underdogs. Fairly recently, perhaps you may have heard of diamond finds in the Kimberleys in an area called Umbulgari, which is now being mined, has been explored and is now being mined by a South African mining company. This area has a potential even greater than any find in South Africa, but fairly recently, in fact just a couple of weeks before Christmas, diamonds were also found at Kalumburu, which is on the coast from Wyndham, and that find is supposed to even surpass that of Umbulgari. These areas, Umbulgari and Kalumburu, are areas where the diamonds have been found, are owned by Aborigines. Sir Charles Court and his government believe that any area of Western Australia is for the betterment and for the use of the West Australian people in general and not specifically for Aborigines. So Aborigines have a right over there just to sit, to light a fire, to camp perhaps, and then when Sir Charles Court or any mining company comes along, they so move, so they therefore do move, and the land is taken over by mining companies. In the past, I would say around about 1972, the Aboriginal Affairs Planning Authority Act was passed, along by the Heritage Act, and this was passed by the then Mr. Tonkin government, a Labor government, which was in power for 3 years. In that 3 years, they made many changes for Aborigines. Two of the changes which they did make, which was for the betterment of Aboriginal people, were the passing of the Aboriginal Affairs Planning Authority Act and the Heritage Act. Now, these two acts gave Aborigines a right to control any mining company and to entry onto Aboriginal reserves. They had to, of course, gained permission of the chairman of the Aboriginal Lands Trust, who was an Aboriginal, Mr. Ken Colbung, and they also had to gain permission of the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs Planning Authority, Mr. Frank Gere. Well, they were able to consistently keep mining companies out of Aboriginal reserves. Those of you who remember the Ridge Bridge debacle in Parliament just before Christmas, where Alan Ridge was accused and found guilty of improper practices regarding elections, and he was position as Minister for Community Welfare was declared void and a re-election was held. But because of the Liberal Party power in Western Australia, when the election was held, he got back into power again. Mr. Ernie Bridge was, of course lost. Now, if the two present bills, the present bill which is likely to go through Parliament in the next week, that is a deletion of the Mining Act, addition to the Mining Act, this will mean that the Mining Act will supersede the Aboriginal Affairs Planning Authority Act and the Heritage Act, and this will give the Minister for Community Welfare, Mr. Ridge, the right to grant permit onto Aboriginal land. Now, this will mean complete land loss for Aborigines. They will not be granted any royalties, and in fact, if they are told to move, they will have to move because that's how the law will be. So I ask you, the people of Melbourne, to keep your eyes on the situation in Western Australia. We seem to be a long way away. Sometimes we think we are on the other side of the moon because so little of what is going over there in the Aboriginal field is known by people in the eastern states. This is, of course, because of the Liberal Party, Country Party domination of the media itself in Western Australia. And we ask you to try and learn somehow from us, and we will try and get information over here for you and those who are sympathetic to act on our behalf when Sir Charles Court introduces, as we do not expect him to do, introduces legislation in the next couple of weeks.
The next speaker that will be addressing you is one person from this state which has been associated with the movement of Aboriginal affairs for the last 20 years in association with Sir Pastor Doug, Uncle Doug Nichols, as Miss Margaret Briggs, MS Briggs, or Sister Briggs, and she's associated with the Lands Council, Women and Islander Movement, I think it is. I'm not too sure. I've just sort of got the information, but if you will bear with us, I think that you will have something to listen to, maybe something that you haven't heard before, maybe it will be of benefit to you regarding the movement of Aboriginal action. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to say a few words. I will be making it brief because my brothers and sister from Queensland will be giving you important information which is affecting our people very much so, as you all know. I'd just like to have a few words in regard to self-determination in Aboriginal affairs and the effect of that government policy which is being so badly misused, that word, in regard to Aboriginal people. When the federal government had the policy drawn up of self-determination for Aboriginal people, it was done so without consultation, and we should have realised then that this was the basic groundwork for which way in what the action would be following on from there. Speaking as president of the Victorian Aborigines Advancement League, we have had this demonstrated to us very recently when we were directed by the Department of Aboriginal Affairs into putting off one of our white workers, and I say one because we have three or four other white workers within our organisation, Mr. Philip Cairns. And the decision that was made to put him on was done by Aboriginal people and not by the department. Another thing that I could mention to you for your information was as the Secretary for the National Council of Aboriginal and Island Women, because our organisation put on two workers to help with the workload, being a national organisation, we had two people in the field and two in the office. When we advised the government through our audited statement that we had the extra people on, that was when our funds were cut. They were treating us as a state group anyway. And for instance, in regard to our group, we would have approximately at that time $6 a week for travel, a national organisation. And why I mention this to you is because we're not the only ones that are being dealt with in this manner by the Department of Aboriginal Affairs and the Liberal government. And I'd like to ask you people sitting out there tonight, just what is it that is happening? You know, the white people in the community pride themselves on being fair to everybody. And yet, just what are you doing about the situation of Aboriginal and Island people in this country, the Indigenous people? And you wonder why there's so much bitterness coming from our people? You are the ones who are directing the government by your votes. And the Liberal government coalition, Bajalki Joe, This is what's killing our people's spirit. I'm not very good at figures, but I know the policies that are affecting our people on a national level, because we cannot come under a federal policy. Personally, I knew that the situation would not be as we would hope with the federal government when they were communicating with the state government in Queensland, because, you see, we've had quite a number of years' experience with Liberal policy. And so, as far as I was concerned, it was to be expected, the result that came over the air tonight. And we have one of the largest death rates in the world to prove that point. In Aboriginal affairs, when you speak of self-determination in our community, the people that are in the organisations have a great responsibility to the majority, and those that are in positions in the organisations have a great load because they try to make the best decision for the majority. The government people, where does their relevance come into it? They've gone through university. They've got university degrees and standards, and yet they can sit up and say what is going to happen to Aboriginal people. Where is the relevance in that when we are not even mentioned in the school curriculum, when our culture is not given the response, the recognition, when our history is not even recognised? You may find about half a dozen lines in your textbooks. When our schools are not given the opportunity of recognising the true Australian culture, we see other people's cultures being written up, respect given to it, and yet here today, our people are still crying out for recognition in regard to our sacred areas, our burial grounds, and our human rights in this affluent country. However, I won't keep you any longer, because I believe that my brothers and sister have too many important things to let you know about. I thank you for the opportunity of speaking to you.
You're listening to an episode of the five-part series Black Gold. Produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Black Gold uncovers and celebrates the rich Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander contributions to radio across four decades.
Remember Monash when Fraser got locked up in the shithouse?
Come down here tomorrow, please, 7:30, right?
Hang on, I'm making an announcement. You had your say earlier and you've stuffed it up. Blacks are doing this meeting. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m. at Menzies Lecture Hall at Monash University at 8 p.m, Mr. Fraser will make his presence felt. And we hope that all you people here are really concerned about the plight of the Aboriginal people, will show your faith in us. Our next speaker, I shouldn't say too much more about her. I think that yous all know her, and I'll give you Marcia Langton. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's a sign of the extent to which the Aboriginal movement is becoming more and more organised every day when the National Movement Against Uranium Mining meeting voted a few months ago that the theme of the land right of the uranium rallies on Friday and Saturday around the country should be land rights, not uranium. At last, the organisers of this very important movement recognised that the people who were in the front lines of the uranium mining companies and of the bulldozers were the Aboriginal people. I've seen in Sydney just in the last week, posters right around the city saying land rights, not uranium. to publicise this meeting right through this city. We've seen the poster saying land rights, not uranium, and just about everybody I know is wearing land rights, not uranium badges. This is very, very important. This is not rhetoric. This is the last ditch attempt of the people who are prepared to do something in this society to stop the genocide of Aboriginal people. I was supposed to come here tonight and speak about the effects of uranium mining, but I'm afraid I'll have to say something about Queensland before I get onto that because it makes me so angry. Tonight on the news, Viner announced his compromise. We all knew that there would be a compromise, but we didn't think they'd be that dirty. Viner said that the Queensland government and the Uniting Church will administer Aurukun and Mornington Island jointly, and that after a while, when they've examined how this joint management arrangement works out, it probably won't be necessary to take over or to introduce any legislation to take over Aboriginal reserves in Queensland. This has happened because Peterson wants bauxite. He wants the bauxite at Aurukun, and the federal government is under pressure from the mining lobby and from the country party politicians to back down, and they back down. What it will mean for the people at Aurukun is exactly what it meant for the people at Mapoon back in the early 60s. The Mapoon people were rounded up in the middle of the night at gunpoint, put on boats, and as they looked back over the water, all their houses were burnt down. We can guarantee you that the Queensland government will be this brutal again. The problem, as we see it, is this. Mining companies are our mortal enemies. Throughout Australia, mining companies are moving onto Aboriginal land and they are killing us. They are killing us. I mean that quite literally. In the Northern Territory, uranium mining will proceed from the Owen Pelly area down to Central Australia and eventually down to South Australia. Mining companies will rip up the guts of this country. And we have all our arguments to put to you as to why mining companies should not rip up our land. But remember that you live here too. And within 20 years, this country will be unrecognisable. First of all, because about 1.5% of the population will barely exist. And secondly, because the country as you know it today will be so ugly, it will be so scarred, that there will be no return. What uranium mining means to the Gunwingu people in Arnhem Land is genocide. They don't realise that yet. Otherwise, they'd be taking the same kind of stand that the Aurukun people are taking. The Aurukun people know what the Queensland government is like. They know what they've done at Mapoon. They know what they've done at Palm Island. They know what they're going to do at Yarrabah. And right across this country. What the Gunwingu people don't understand is basic things like the size of the mine. When the uranium government, I mean the Fraser government, made its announcement, right, made its announcement about the uranium go-ahead, a journalist went down to the border store and he spoke to an old man at the border store there and he said to him, what do you think about this mining? And the old man said, oh, it's okay as long as they don't mine our sacred land and as long as they cover up the holes. Some poor little animal might come along and fall into the hole and that wouldn't be very good. I wouldn't like to see a little animal get hurt. He honestly thought that the hole was going to be about that big. The waste from the hole will cover 250 hectares to a height of 100 metres. Black people in Arnhem Land cannot envisage that. What it will mean, in general terms, is the denial of real land rights. All of that land where uranium will be mined is under Aboriginal claim. Claims have been put into the Aboriginal Land Court. The Aboriginal Land Commissioner, Justice Toohey, is hearing those land claims. That land is Aboriginal land, and I want to make that point very, very strongly to you. All the land that uranium mining is on in Australia is Aboriginal land. I don't mean that it's just sacred land. I mean it's our land. Those people rely for their everyday existence on that land. They eat bush tucker. They hunt the geese, oysters, fish. Their whole way of life will be destroyed when mining starts. It means the imposition of a mining culture. Perhaps some of you are aware of what's happened at Bougainville. The people at Bougainville did not want the mining, and they fought to stop the mining. And a compromise was made. And today, they think they've got a good deal with the royalties. But all the money they get with wages and royalties is spent right back in the supermarkets and the shops, etc., which are owned by the mining companies, and you can bet your life that they're ripping them off. This is what's going to happen to our people in Arnhem Land. Sure, they'll get royalties, but the mining companies will control the whole commercial environment, as they almost do already throughout Australia. It will mean the complete destruction of the environment and the ecology on which the Aborigines depend. And the way that that will happen, first of all, and the way that the Aboriginal people see it, is when their sacred sites are destroyed, and I don't mean a plot of land there or a plot of land there, I mean a whole integrated system whereby the mythology, the sacred stories that explain our existence, the way they are related to the land, the dreaming tracks, where the spirits rested as they went on their way, etc., etc., all that will be destroyed. The whole Aboriginal mythology, philosophy, and way of life will be destroyed when even one dreaming track is crossed by a Jeep or a Land Cruiser or a Toyota truck, as they got up there, Toyota trucks. It will destroy the food. You are perhaps aware of the outstation movement. All the Aboriginal people throughout Australia are returning from the government settlements, the mission settlements, to their tribal homelands. In the top end, they call it the outstation movement. Elsewhere, they call it the homelands movement. The people are going back to their land, occupying it, setting up their stores and their houses and their airstrips, and creating a new Aboriginal Australia. Not the Aboriginal Australia that has dwelt for the last 50, 100 years on the outskirts of towns, but we're taking our land back, bit by bit and slowly, but we're taking it back. And it is the only way that Aboriginal people will survive the onslaught of so-called white civilization. And mining is just going to, you know, destroy our last attempts to revive our culture. When mining companies say in their reports, oh, there's only 10 sacred sites there, they're lying. Because the Aboriginal people won't tell them where their sacred sites are, what their dreaming tracks are, because they'll do what they did at Yirrkala. They'll put a little fence around the tree or around the rock or whatever it is and dig everything else away from around it. The white mining companies and the white government of this country have absolutely no understanding of us, and they never will have. They claim to have, as Bjelke Petersen claims to. And even though they've administered our affairs from woe to go for the last 200 years, they will never understand what we're on about. They're too racist. They're too greedy. The health problems are just untenable. The health problems in that area just made me cry when I went there. In Owen Pelly, 25% of the people have been treated for leprosy. There are people walking around who are my age with no hands and no feet. A quarter of the population is being eaten away by leprosy, and the health authorities are not doing anything about it. They'll send a few people over to the leprosariums when it gets a bit bad, but they're not doing anything about it. The VD is just incredible, and the health authorities won't do anything about that either. In 1971, before there was an influx of whites into the area, there was no VD. Last year, 300 cases were reported to the health authorities, and that's with only a couple of hundred whites in the whole of Arnhem Land. When thousands and thousands of miners go into that area, when thousands of tourists are allowed in, people will be destroyed by VD, by coals, by all the diseases that didn't exist in this country before the white people came here. Alcoholism is another problem. The Owen Pelly Council has fought 3 injunctions against the owners of the border store just on the outside of the Arnhem Land border. They spent thousands and thousands of dollars of their own money to stop white people from selling grog because they saw that as one of the main enemies of their people. And finally, last week, I think the DAA bought it, or they announced that they would, but you can't trust them at all. So, you know, I'll stick by my statement and say that the Owen Pelly people should be given complete control of the sale of alcohol in that area. Cancer is another problem. This is one of the facts that was not even published in the Fox report because it's just too hot. And that is that, and this was reported by the Northern Territory Health Authorities to the Alligator Rivers Inquiry in 1973, over 4 years ago, and they said that the rate of acute leukemia and carcinoma of the lung was higher than would be expected, and that the people should be monitored every year. They have not been monitored. They send in a doctor once a week to wipe runny noses, etc., etc. They're not dealing with the diseases that are crippling the people. Cancer, leukemia, leprosy, VD, etc. The racial tensions in the area when the miners move in will be almost incurable. The pattern of white-black relations in this country has been quite dramatically shown elsewhere, but throughout the Northern Territory, wherever miners are, racial tensions are deplorable. Aboriginal people are exploited, Aboriginal women are exploited, and I'm sure that I don't have to elaborate any more on that to try to explain to you what I'm talking about. In the Northern Territory, for instance, I mean, in Arnhem Land, for instance, I only saw perhaps 4 or 5 half-caste children. You can imagine what's going to happen to those people when 4 or 5,000 white miners go in there. They have no way of coping with that. They are completely vulnerable. As for the question of royalties, it's very interesting, you know. The only time in the last 10 years when Aboriginal people have got, you know, more than... Well, have got decent press coverage. I wouldn't call it decent. I'd call it fairly indecent, but have got a fair deal of press coverage. It's during the Aboriginal Embassy and when royalties were announced to the Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory. The press went off their heads. Tribes wait for millions. Rich Fellow My Country. Dawn of the Uranium Dreamtime. Stone Age Millionaires, etc., etc., ad nauseam. The people have said time and time again that they don't want the royalties. They've said money cannot buy us a new culture. And still the press persist with these lies. The people don't want the royalties. But in any case, there won't be millions and millions of dollars. The story that the press picked up, you can figure out if you read the last, say, 40 pages of the second Fox report. Those royalty figures are based on peak year productions, which won't be reached for a number of years. The Aboriginal people are entitled to 2.5% of the gross proceeds of sales. That will not occur for some time. There will be preparation, the pits will have to be dug, etc., etc. Aboriginal people will perhaps get some royalties, in about 10 years' time. And judging from the federal government's back down on a number of issues, including Queensland just lately, I will predict right now, and I'm sure that I'm right, that the royalties will not even come about. At Nabalco, for instance, at Yirrkala, the Aboriginal people are only getting 1.25%. The government will probably reduce uranium royalties back to 1.25%. I just heard this evening that all the government departments are putting in submissions to the cabinet on how much royalties Aboriginal people should receive. Trade and Resources said 1.25%. We're waiting to find out what the DAA says. In any case, even if they do allow the legal position where Aboriginal people are allowed royalties to exist, they will probably tax it or use some other devious means to stop Aboriginal people from getting any compensation. It's impossible to explain to you what it's like in Arnhem Land. But when I went there last year, the first thing that hit me, and like a ton of bricks, was that the Aboriginal people there do not know what uranium mining is all about. They don't know what uranium is used for. They don't know what a mine is looks like. They can't imagine a town right next door to them. And when I tried to talk to the people, it was just impossible to relate the concepts to them. Most of the people speak Gunwingu, very few of them can speak English, and very few of them are literate, despite the fact that there's been a mission school there since 1925. And that's one of the major problems that we face, is how to get the message across to them. Well, I started a campaign last year to try to get that message across to them. We're all here tonight because the government beat me. Well, you know, I came pretty close to it, and I don't feel upset about it at all, because, you know, I won with words and they won with millions and millions of dollars. This is the telegram I got from Galaroi Yunupingu, chairman of the Northern Land Council, a few weeks ago. It is with regret that I confirm that it is necessary for myself and the Northern Land Council to withdraw from the proposed Fakatsi land rights tour. I had not expected that anything would happen to prevent the Northern Land Council taking part in the tour, but recently powerful influences are being used within the government and the commercial environment against projects that the Northern Land Council is working on. I'll leave that to your own imagination. This is a Northern Territory matter where certain parties, mining interests in particular, are attempting to exploit the local situation for their own purposes on the national scene. Further down, he says, the situation has not changed and in fact has hardened. This council must represent and protect the interests of Aboriginal landowners in the top end of the Northern Territory. It is inconceivable that Aboriginal landowners would be party to the destruction of their land. So you see, the Northern Land Council can't move. It's been told by the government to shut up. They cannot make any public statements. He says that in here. Because of this, the council is unable to take part in any public activity at a national level until the project in question has been safely concluded. The Northern Land Council has been told to shut up. They can't tell me to shut up because they don't own me and they'll never own me. They don't own any of the people on this platform either. The Department of Aboriginal Affairs has learnt a lot of lessons from neo-colonialism, and that is how to control Aboriginal people and how to shut them up, how to buy them into the system. I still have hopes that the Northern Land Council will not completely sell out, and I hope that while they are negotiating, that they get as much support as they possibly can from people throughout Australia, because their bargaining position depends on that support. It doesn't depend on the hundreds of thousands of dollars that the government gives them to carry out the negotiations, to pay for lawyers, etc., etc. It depends on the political climate. And when White Australia supports the valid political demands of Aboriginal people, that is land rights and self-determination, when they wholeheartedly support those demands, we will win. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
That was Marcia Langton speaking there back in 1978 at a land rights meeting held in Melbourne.
As one I think that you should all listen to with great sincerity, it comes from the North Queensland Lands Council, Delegate for Yarrabah, Secretary for Yidinji Tribal Group. Ladies and gentlemen, his English name is Mark Noble. I cannot pronounce his Aboriginal name. Here he is to you.
Thank you. My name is Mark Noble. I represent the Yidinji tribe, which is North Queensland. It's 11 miles by water, by boat, 32 miles by the highway. In 1973, the Mapoon people went back to the tribal lands at Mapoon. And also, at the same time, but I was a bit closer, near the Cairns, and I helped the Yidinji tribe to go back to their own tribal lands. There are two tribes there, which is a neighbouring tribe, is the Gunganji tribe, and the Yarrabah is situated on the peninsula. It's a large peninsula of Cairns. off the Trinity Bay. Now, Yarrabah was founded in 1892. It was quite a years ago. So anyways, I'll get down to the details, but I think it was on Saturday in Canberra. The papers, well, I read the papers there, and our Premier, Mr. Bjelke Joe Pedersen, which we give him a nickname, the Flying Peanut, he announced in the paper that the Act, the Aboriginal Act, does not exist in Queensland whatsoever. I don't know how a person like that could tell Australia such a bare face and a true lie. The Aboriginal and the Torres Strait Island Act are two different acts. There is an act for the island people, and there is an act for the Aboriginals. And that is still very much effective in Queensland. Now, if, I was just saying if, of course, but I know there wouldn't be that possibility. But if Mr. Bjelke Joe Pedersen was here tonight, I would love to see him about the act. But still in all, I was very much disappointed this evening, according to the news, that he has won again. I'm very disappointed in the Viner Minister for Aboriginals, that he's turned the Aboriginal people in both Mornington and Aurukun down. Not only the two settlements, but also there are 16 other settlements or missions along the coast of North Queensland. I know, you all know, as well as I do, this evening we heard it, so I won't go any further details. So I'll give you details of the position where I am in Yarrabah. Now, we have an attack of mining, like we do in a further north, from Cooktown, but we have a different attack. It's commercialized, such as the International Airport, which is be running into the Gungunji tribal and the sacred lands, a deep water port for big ships. Right, and naturally they have to build facilities such as a town, recreations for seamen, etc., and a railway line that is on the end of the peninsula at King's Point. To the south, about another 18 miles, where the Idinjis are, the tribal name of the place is Badabadu. Right. Now, the Idinjis are in there. There's timber. It hasn't been touched from time began. Now, they've gone in there. They've started to cut timber. And the railway line is proposed by plan, which is set at 20 years, I suppose, a plan for a railway line. But now that Bjelke Joe has won this battle, the railway line will be sooner than we expected. There are caravan parks, planning for the area, safari tourist boats, the buses come to the highway, and so we have a different attack at Yarrabah. So it is a very sorry thing and a grievous thing to the people there, which is the two tribes, and of course, Yarrabah has been built by the Progress of Australia, with a lot of the Aboriginals from all parts of Queensland were sent there under the police to clear the land for progress. Now, they have mingled and married into the five generations, so they're a great member of family, as the whole community is a member of a family. They're married into now. Right. But the fact is this. Every Aboriginal, from the old to the youngest, or to the baby, is the property of the state. So when you'll be hearing on the news again, as Mr. Bjelke Joe Pedersen says so, the Aboriginals are running their own affair. Don't believe him. I am there. All Aboriginals there are members of tenant. It's a tenant. That is all. They pay their rent and they live and told what to do. Now, we have technical people there. Some came from here, educated here, Adelaide, Tranby College. They cannot get employment, technical men. He said, no, there isn't a job here for you. You'll have to get it out in the city. And that's what they came right down here for. So there's not one Aboriginal has a right of a voice, not under the Protection Act, which as he calls it, or the, we call it the Illinois Discrimination Act anyway. So the fact is this, that there's not one Aboriginal has a right to even say. Well, let me tell you something this. They know I'm here. And most probably when I go back, I'll be in jail too. You cannot get a permission without a pass. The penalty is $200 without a permit. Black or white? There was a boy only a week ago. He wanted to come home and see his mum and dad. A young lad. He'd been born there. Grew up there. He said, I want to go home and live with mum and dad. You know what he was told? He has to write a note to the director, Mr. Cloran, to give him consent to be a resident when he's already the people are tenants. He said, this land does not belong to the Aboriginal, it belongs to the Queensland government. If he did not get a pass or a permit to be to be in Yarraba, he could be arrested and escorted to the Brandy line and make him walk to town. And that happens at this very moment. So you see, the story's different. You're quite you're a long way down here in Victoria. The only things you hear are the good side. But I came down here to represent the Lands Council and to let you people know exactly how we stand and how we are treated at Yarraba, all as far this Palm Island, and the rest of the community. We've called for public meetings. A public meeting is a thing. It's out of the question. Anything you want to know in personal or you want some advice, you can get advice, all right. He said, look, you're a radical. You're a troublemaker. I think you better go before I get you arrested. That is honest fact that goes on at any settlements under Yogi Joe and the DIA, whatever they call it, department. And they are there to protect or supposed to teach us how to live, our people to live in a different culture and better living. So to educate us, this is the story they give us, of course, to educate us so we can live in a white man's community. We are not in the hunt according to their constitution. No Aboriginal has a right. If he asks for his right, as I said a few minutes ago, a second ago, he is automatically arrested and called him. They say, look, he's a member of the Black Power, he's something else. You know, all this, they put this on. Now this goes on. I've seen in Yarraba some drastic things which you'd never even read about. But the question of mining and the act, the invasion of tourism, which is a positive fact. Now, they're not only asking for the international airport to be built, they've got what I call the BBA, which is the Bush Pilots Airway. When I was asked in the public meeting, the local director, which is the manager there, he said he knew nothing about it, and the boys had bulldozers there building an airstrip. So they don't tell lies nighttime. They tell them daytime over there. Yeah, they don't wait till they go to sleep. They tell you there, daytime. There's no aerodrome getting built there. There's men working every day. Well, what are you doing down there? We're building an airport for the bush pilots. You ask him, he said, oh, no, that's not an airplane. You see? He doesn't know when he's telling a lie. But we're not confused because the younger generations are educating themselves. They've been educated or they're getting educated now. That we live in a different era. Not the old Stone Age, walk around a Walmart and spin chasing a wallaby. these automatic rifles and all that sort of thing that we modernized. So, now, in Yarrabah, one of the oldest missions there, we have technical girls, technical boys, and we think differently too. Well, they think differently, and so we have a Western style in us. So this act should not hold this bondage, a chain, around our neck. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to me.
North Queensland Land Commission. Her name is Joyce Hall. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Probably you might have heard a place called Weeper, where I come from, far up north, Cape York Peninsula, Gulf of Carpentaria. I come where the mining is. The mining is right in the heart of Weeper. They are digging lots of bauxite. You might wonder what the bauxite is like. It's red little pebbles, red as this carpet. They get a lot of bauxite from the holes. The holes are really deep as this. And by God, you see the haul packs, the scrapers, the D9, all the big equipment runs up and down, carting bauxite. Also the train runs from the mining area, my tribal land, Anang. Anang is the place I value, my tribal land. Today, it doesn't look like Anang itself. Red soil is everywhere. Dirty soft mud, red mud. Even runs out where they cart the bauxite to the ships. It makes our oysters go red, oily. The mineral that they are taking out is really dusty. Makes the place look red. Place is destroyed. Most of our hunting areas are destroyed, but not the sacred grounds. We feel we are lost. Lot of houses are put up at Rocky Point for the white people. Not much housing went up for the Aborigines. We blacks are put aside. We've got young girls and boys. They feel like getting married. But what's the use of them getting married where there's no houses? The Kamalko has taken a lot from us. They are not supporting us. Mining did do a lot of damage to the people and the children. Holes everywhere. Andun, that's Anang, my tribal, and they call Andun. Kambrinja, Napranam, Beening, mainly at Munding. And we're more or less in a little rectangle shape, just like cattle or locked in a paddock. We have no chance of going out further hunting. white people everywhere. Every angle you go, you see white people. This is where they are taking our pride, damaging our children, our old people. We have big ships, really huge ships coming from overseas and crept unaware. That carts the bauxite from the mining area at Loren Point. Some are divided. The raw bauxite goes on the ships and some are smelted, go through the smelting machine. And goodness, when the westerly wind blows, the powder goes towards us, dirty, smelly, stinking thing.
That was Joyce Hall from the then North Queensland Land Commission and speaking there at the Aboriginal Land Rights Meeting held at RMIT Story Hall on the 29th of March back in 1978. Thank you to 3CR presenters Robbie Thorpe and Viv Malo. Thank you to Nancy Aitken, who recorded the audio of the Aboriginal Land Rights Meeting back in 1978. You've been listening to Black Gold, a five-part series unearthing some of our finest audio from across four decades in the 3CR archives. The Black Gold series was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio on Wurundjeri land in Fitzroy, Melbourne, by myself, Kerry Lee Harding, and assistant producer, Corey Green. We would like to thank Bart Willoughby and the late Ross Hannaford for the music featured in this series, lifted from the album Buckskin. The series was financially supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Thanks so much for listening, and if you'd like to listen again or find out more about this unique series, head to 3cr.org.au/blackgold. I look forward to your company next time. See you later.